Hello and welcome. I'm Gary Scheib. Thanks for listening in as we continue to talk with leaders in our community. Joining me today is Stephen Lowe, president of the Seattle Electric Vehicle Association. And what with gas prices, what they are, and all the talk about greenhouse gases and global warming, this should be a topic for anyone who drives a car or breathes air. Stephen, welcome and thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me back. A lot's happened since the last time we chatted.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years and we've got a lot of things to cover. First off, give us a little background on your organization, the Seattle Electric Vehicle Association. Maybe, you know, how long you've been around. What's the main thrust of your group?
26 years. I would have thought by now there'd been 10,000s of electric cars buzzing around back and forth to work. But it's been a harder sell than I could have ever imagined back in 1980. But it was started. We are a chapter of the Electric Auto Association, which is a national group, mm-hmm. and there are dozens of chapters all around the United States and in Canada. Nearby, we've got a chapter in Vancouver, BC, which is very active, and one in Oregon, and then several in California and Arizona.
And so you're not just a bunch of guys in a car club, that it's electric cars. It's more than that, isn't it? What's your purpose?
Well, our purpose is to educate the public on the facts and figures about electric cars, to demonstrate that performance with examples that a lot of our members have built and use every day, and to proliferate those cars through education, speeches, car shows, etc.
Great. And so you have a website.
Absolutely.
And how can people contact you? And we'll give this more than once throughout the show, but how is it easy for people to find out more about the Seattle Electric Vehicle Association?
Probably just to go to www.seattleeva.org. It's a very well-maintained website. One of our members is a web genius of sorts, uh-huh. and he's actually handling websites for the Electric Auto Association plug-in hybrid group as well, which is kind of a subgroup.
Well, I've looked at it quite a bit. There are a lot of links. There's so many resources that people can really find out about if they want to learn more about electric cars.
Right.
Well, let's talk about electric cars. One of my sisters-in-law bought the Honda Insight when they first came out. She was on a waiting list for it. I guess it must be 6 or 7 years ago now. And that, as far as I knew, that was the first mass-produced electric hybrid car to hit the market. And then when I stopped to think about it, I really wondered why. Because electricity was in use before the internal combustion engine.
Oh, absolutely.
And streetcars, all big cities had electric streetcars, and trolleys. At least the early 20th century. I don't know. What is the history? There must be a longer history about electricity powering our vehicles.
This is probably as good a place as any to tell people if they want to get a really good underpinnings of the history of electric cars and maybe why we don't have tens and millions of them on the road today, to do not miss. And I'll have to say that again. Do not miss seeing the documentary movie, quote, Who Killed the Electric Car, unquote, which will be out in two theaters in Seattle July 14th at the Uptown Theater at the foot of Queen Anne and the Metro 10 near 45th, just west of the university. It's an absolute dynamite movie. It's been rumored to already be up for an Academy Award in the documentary program. And I've seen also Al Gore's movie,
The Inconvenient Truth.
The Inconvenient uh-huh. Truth. And I'll tell you, even though, I'm passionate about both ends of that, I think it's a more dramatic movie than Al Gore, maybe because some of the actors and the people who had privy to own electric cars are more dramatic than Al Gore. And then I'm not hitting on Al Gore. I like him.
So this movie demonstrates the history of electricity
cars.
As a power for cars.
And, absolutely.
And how, am I right, was 100 years ago?
There were more on the road 100 years ago than there were gas cars. But as the gas cars and highways and roads improved, people kept wanting more speed, more range. Even though way, way back in the 20s, I think the world record for electric cars was 100 miles an hour. And presently, it's over 300 miles an hour.
Wow.
And we had one of our biggest celebrations, getting back to our educate, demonstrate, and proliferate. Our biggest demonstration was just this last Saturday at the Greenwood Avenue Hot Rod and Custom Car Show. We had over 20 electric vehicles there. And one of the most outstanding was from my friend John Wayland in Portland, nicknamed Plasma Boy, because often some of his creations have gone into fireballs of plasma. But, you know, that the reason is he keeps trying to push the envelope, and that little Datsun he has is turning over 106 miles an hour in a quarter mile.
Wow.
That's faster than probably 80, 90% of all the road vehicles that you could buy, regardless of cost. And he is not by any shape or the fastest dragster, in electric dragster. I'll point people to the National Electric Drag Racing Association, NEDRA.com. Or is it org? Let me see here. Just want to make sure that I give people the right steering. Yeah, NEDRA.com.
National Electric Drag Racing Association. So there's a group just drag races electric cars.
Right, all over the United States.
Wow.
And growing. And some of them are turning, you know, in the low tens seconds, and that is extremely fast. There's a guy in California, or several people in California, that have built electric cars using what I'd like to call the highest energy density type of batteries. They're quite costly right now, lithium batteries, like in our cell phones and our laptops. But if you fill a car full of those, you only got about 400 or 500 pounds, not 1,000 pounds. Mm. And those cars are faster than a Ferrari, faster than a double turbo Porsche Carrera at $400,000. And if they want to see that, just check it out on the web under the Right Speed, WRIGHT, Right Speed X1. It is an incredible piece of video.
Wow. Well, how about for the layman? I mean, a lot of regular manufacturers now making the gas electric hybrid. Toyota Prius is probably the most successful, popular.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Honda makes a few versions. Mm-hmm. Lexus, Toyota, Ford, and they make SUVs hybrids.
That's correct. Some of them. The Lexus and the Ford are both SUVs, and they will be more. Toyota's said that 90% of their production in the next 10 years will probably be some form of hybrid.
Well, can you describe for us how the one that is being sold, the gas hybrid, how that works? You know, it's somewhat.
I went to a 2-day seminar that cost me over $1,000. I don't think we're going to. You'd have to give me an hour and a half.
But in
lay terms, you have a small pack of batteries and you have one or more electric motors that aid the car. And the gas engine can then be tuned for the type of operation that it's best suited for, which would be cruising. And the electric motors, in turn, are tuned for the most efficient things they do, which is acceleration. And also on the deceleration, you can capture some of that energy as you're going down a hill and stuff it back into the batteries. Now, the one thing that we are fighting against tooth and nail right now is that none of the hybrids can be plugged in. All of the energy has to come from buying gasoline.
Well, that's the next question, I guess. Why not?
The next step,
The plug-in hybrid is sort of been jerry-rigged by people on their own, right? People convert somewhat regular hybrid that they can buy on the market into this plug-in kind. What's that? What's a plug-in hybrid then?
Well, let's take the Prius because it's most popular, okay? And on a good day, they'll get 40, 45, maybe sometimes 50 miles per gallon gasoline by combining this electric power and the batteries and regeneration going down the hill. And they're very clean vehicles. But like I said, all the energy comes from gas. Now, let's say we increase the battery pack a little bit, either by adding a second battery pack or what we would like to see, just Toyota to build it with a bigger battery pack to start with. Mm-hmm. Now, in Europe and in the Orient, all Priuses have a button called the E-button, which forced the car to run on electric only at boulevard speeds up to 30, 35 miles an hour. So the first thing that we do here in the States to modify one of these is to, one, add the E-button. Now, that doesn't do you any good unless you can plug in, because you'd just be
using...
You
still have to buy the gas.
You still have to buy the gas, and the internal battery pack that the Prius comes with would only let that car go down the road 1 or 2 or 3 miles, because they are very, very conservative on the way they use that energy. So just having the E-button alone isn't going to do it. But that's step number one, E-button. Step number two, add some extra batteries. Step number three, have some way for the Prius to use that extra power and not mess anything up. No programming changes or anything. So it works just like a standard Prius. In other words, if you had a plug-in Prius that we had orchestrated and you said all of a sudden you have to go to Portland, mm-hmm. Not to worry even if you forgot to plug it in last night, because when the batteries get down to a certain point, the gas engine comes on just like a standard Prius. And the fourth and last thing, of course, is to have a way of charging those extra batteries at home. Now, when you do that, the efficiency of an electric motor is 5 times that of a gas engine, a heat engine. And because of that, it's like having gasoline that costs maybe 60, 70 cents a gallon for every mile you can travel under the electric motor. And so at the end of the week, let's say you had a very inexpensive battery pack and maybe only $900 or $1,000 worth, okay? Let's forget about the really sophisticated lithium batteries mm-hmm. that Toyota might use in the near future. But just some lead-acid batteries. And even if you could only get 10 miles of pure electric drive out of those batteries, and your commute was 20 miles, that means that half the time you'd be running on electricity, right?
Yeah.
The average at the end of the week, over 100 miles per gallon.
Well, that's staggering. I mean, that's such a good change, such an efficient difference. Why isn't it? I mean, this E-button,
well,
I mean, to plug it in, it seems like a no-brainer.
It is a no-brainer. It takes seconds, you know, and the amount of power, you don't need a really hard, like a mega charger, because it's sitting there overnight, and it's not a big battery pack. It's just a battery pack that kind of helps the car along.
My home wiring is sufficient enough
Absolutely.
To plug it into
any 20-amp circuit.
20-amp circuit, 110-volt
right.
at the house.
Right. So why hasn't Toyota done this to start with? Well, back when they started their program, they really didn't have the batteries, or maybe they didn't have the know-how. But now that they've had years, maybe decades of practice with their normal gas-powered hybrids, and they've also had some experience with pure electric cars in California mm-hmm. back 15 years ago, and a lot of experience with metal nickel hydride batteries, I think they see the light now, and we've been pressuring them with organizations like California Cars Initiative and Plug-in America and the Hybrid Consortium. These are groups that have been pushing the auto manufacturers to go back to the lab, build us a plug-in hybrid, and we know we'll have customers for you when you can put it on the showroom floor.
Well, that raises, you know, a couple of questions. And I have a couple different ways I can go that. So they resisted this plug-in route, maybe because of technology at first, maybe because they didn't see the demand. I recall they sort of did surveys and said, oh, people won't want to plug in their car at home, thinking.
Yeah.
But now with gas, especially the last year,
yeah,
people would love to not ever go to a gas station.
Exactly. And, you know, the Electric Power Research Institute, EPRI, did some research on this years ago, and their findings were that, you know, if a person could get 100, 150 miles per gallon out of a hybrid, they wouldn't mind plugging in at all.
Yeah.
And another question that comes up, well, if we have all these electric cars and plug-in hybrids, aren't we going to tax the grid? Millions, tens of millions of electric cars, pure electric cars and plug-in hybrids, tens of millions could get onto the grid and not tax it anywhere soon, maybe and never, because as we develop wind power and solar power, that'll even be better. The reason being that most of them, almost all of them, would be charging in the evenings when there's off-peak.
Mm-hmm. When all the businesses are shut down anyway.
Exactly.
And so you mentioned the grid. Just explain a little more about what
the power grid. The power grid. Our whole. You're right. The whole power system that we have, the generators, the coal-fired plants, the hydroelectric dams, the few atomic energy plants. That's the grid. It's all interconnected. I mean, when we have a surplus up here, sometimes we sell power to California,
right,
and vice versa.
And so, well, then let's talk about the efficiency then of the from the original energy source, whether. You know, we're making our electricity as a society from hydroelectric, geothermal, nuclear, coal-fired, oil-fired. How does an electric car then compare efficiency as opposed to, you know, drilling for oil? Well, I guess the oil, if you talk about a gasoline car, it goes all the way back to searching for oil,
yeah. Searching,
drilling. Transporting pipelines, tankers,
and one that,
retransporting, refining, getting it then to my pump before right. I use it.
And there's one you can't forget, and I don't like to bring it up because I'm not a conspiracy theorist or anything, but a lot of what we do on the international scene has to do with keeping our oil flowing.
Mm-hmm.
The Set America Free as a website, setamericafree.org, is on top of this hybrid idea and electric cars because they see that one, not a big attack, but one well-placed terrorist bomb in the Saudi oil fields or their refining facilities in Saudi Arabia could put this world upside down when it comes to energy. And they know that. And it's really scary.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, it wouldn't take much. I mean, just look at the fluctuation in prices when Venezuela, you know, burps and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the world demand for oil that keeps coming larger and larger from China and India. And when you get down to it, I would rather see what oil we have left on this earth used for plastics, medicines, fertilizer, and other things we need rather than to burn it in our cars. I suppose there's a good place to put this in here, but you know when you buy a dollar's worth of fuel for your car, I mean even an efficient car, do you know how much you get at the rear wheels?
No.
20 cents.
And explain that then. And,
it all
and
goes up in heat.
So the actual gasoline
is burned.
And I'm only getting 20% of its efficiency on the rubber on the road.
20% of the total energy, and the other 80% is going out in the radiator and the exhaust pipe.
And so then an electric vehicle or a hybrid even. But
well, let's
talk about
with,
a pure electric
yeah,
car.
Yeah, let's start with electric because it's the best.
If you
And if you put that dollar in, you get 80 cents at the wheels.
That's the complete flip-flop.
Absolutely. Now, you lose a little bit in charging and discharging your batteries. The motors aren't perfect, but they're close. And all the electronics that are, you know, electric car, to put it in 10 words or less, you've got the batteries here. You've got a throttling device. Let's call it a giant light dimmer, like your light dimmer
okay.
at home. And then you've got the electric motor. And so when you mash on the accelerator, it's very smooth. It can be as smooth as you want, just like dimming your lights up and down at home. So you lose about 20% through that whole thing. Now, if you want to go all the way back to the well, as they say, like well to wheels,
yeah.
There are losses in the transmission lines. You know, there are losses at the dam or the nuclear plant and so on and so on. But they're nowhere near, I don't care how you cut it, to the losses of the drilling, the exploration, the armies, the transportation, the storage, the changing of crude oil to gasoline, blah, 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 on
right,
and on and on.
Right.
It's just
fascinating.
You know. Now, in a plug-in hybrid, you've got a little bit of both. One of the things that people have not fought me with, but I mean, you know, I've been talking to people for 25 years, and you say, well, that sounds great, Mr. Lowe, and that electric car efficiency and so on, but you say in that home-built electric you got there in your electric car club, that'll only go about 30, 40 miles a day, right? And I said, right, that's about right. Well, what about when I want to go to Portland? Well, I say, rent a Cadillac after it gets up to speed. It's not too bad per mile in efficiency or pollution. And they kind of turn and walk away. So it's always been this range issue. But if the majority of electric cars were also hybrid, plug-in hybrid cars, you would have the two best two things in one car. You could make a long trip at any moment, and yet all this mundane driving we all do worldwide, 30 miles or less a day worldwide, would be electric miles. Clean.
Because most people drive fewer than the 40 miles a day.
Sure, yeah.
And so they could be recharging every night and not using gas at all until they need to do that.
Exactly.
Trip. On the same car. I wouldn't have to have an electric car and my regular car. The plug-in hybrid could really answer that question.
Exactly, and that's why the big push for plug-ins. There's also another thing that has to be mentioned, and that's all the research money and government grants that is being wasted and squandered on fuel cells.
That's your use of the word fuel cell. It's very, for some reason, that grabs a lot of headlines. I don't
Absolutely.
Know why. I guess it's techie or something, but
well,
it's
promise
hard to
of
figure
being,
out how come that
The promise
works,
of being clean. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it is clean. Once you get the hydrogen into the car, you've got a electric car being powered by a fuel cell, which is making your electricity as you go along.
Makes electricity.
Yeah, and here's where the trouble comes. Where do you get that hydrogen? You have to go backwards, like I said, from the well to the wheels.
Yeah.
Now, let's take that dollar again.
I have a feeling you're going to tell me this is going to be a very inefficient way to make our electricity.
Exactly, and it's not pretty. That same dollar, there's two ways that we now presently make hydrogen, either by cracking water apart, which is called electrolysis, or you can pull it out of methane, which leaves carbon into the air. But we get about 50 cents worth of hydrogen. Now, that's right. We get 50 cents worth. Now we got to transport that 50 cents worth, put it into a Texaco station, and sell it to you, not to be too derogatory, but the sucker who just bought a $99,000
right.
GM fuel cell car.
That's
right?
me, right?
Okay.
I'll be that guy today.
I thought
I was doing something good.
I know you are, because at that point now, there's no pollution. The hydrogen is that you pull oxygen from
that's
the air.
Right.
It's recombined in these stacks, which kind of almost look like batteries in a way. And when you pull these two elements together, water is made and electricity is given off. Trouble is, we only get about 25 cents worth of electricity.
Oh.
So we lose another half. And that's the best we can do right now.
Mm.
Now, wait a minute. We're not done. Now we've got an electric car. So now we lose that 20% again, 20% of 25 cents.
Oh, no. Because we're still using electric motors, then actually
to drive the cars,
fuel
yeah.
cell car.
Yeah, the fuel cell cars are electric.
It's an
cars.
Electric car. We've made our own electricity in the car
right.
by making hydrogen somewhere upstream,
right.
in a sort of an inefficient way, or at least
right.
a very costly way. It sounds
right.
like. Wow.
Yeah. So I think you lose another 5 cents.
Mm.
So
well,
we're back to about just like a gas
yeah,
car.
Yeah. It doesn't sound. It's clean.
It's
but
clean.
It's not. Efficient money-wise or even energy use-wise.
No, and right. almost every scientist worth their salt has written papers or spoken or talked about this.
It seems to be chic, though, or fashionable or trendy to talk about as
yes.
a...
Arnold Schwarzenegger has a hydrogen
right,
fuel cell Hummer.
Yeah.
if he had a battery Hummer and he could just hum around, yeah. I wouldn't mind.
Well, we've been talking with Stephen Lowe, president of the Seattle Electric Vehicle Association, and you mentioned your group's been around for 26 years, and I'm guessing you guys have had a lot more interest in the last year or so.
Yep.
And you say you go to these local car shows and give lectures and raise public awareness, just like we're doing here today. And you mentioned cars companies. I think you said 20 years ago had some prototypes or something experimental.
Oh, they were far from prototypes. Actually, it's a story that's brought out very, very clearly in the movie Who Killed the Electric Car, coming to your theaters on the 14th of July. They had some success. General Motors had some real success story of making a solar-powered car across Australia.
Mm.
And so Smith, the president at the time, said, geez, this is such a hot item. There's such much good press on this. Why don't I gather a bunch of engineers and see if we can, you know, make a production electric car like we've been talking about for 20 years. So he got AeroVironment together, the people that made the human-powered airplanes and the solar-powered airplanes. And he got AC Propulsion, Inc. down in California that makes AC drive motors for cars. and got all these wonderful people together, and they built the Impact, and it came out at the auto show in, I think, 1990. And it went like crazy. I mean, 0 to 60 in like 6-7 seconds, and it was really flashy. And so they decided to go into production. Now, simultaneously, the California Air Resource Board said, if General Motors can build a production electric car, maybe we should just make a rule and so we can get everybody to make some electric cars and ramp it up slowly. Maybe the first bar will be 2% of all new cars in California have to be zero-emission vehicles. And so they did. And so simultaneously, and this is brought out in the movie in so many different ways, simultaneously, I mean, General Motors was schizophrenic. There were people just in love with this car once they got it in their hands and got it in their own garage. And at the same time, they were lobbying Congress and lobbying the California Air Resource Board and actually took it to federal court to a lawsuit to get the 2% mandate killed. It's the weirdest. And then the really weird thing started. As the leases ran out,
Let's pause here. So they let real people, consumers, have them, drive them around, own them, but not own
lease them.
Lease them.
Yeah.
Lease them.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming the owners loved them.
Yes. Jay Leno liked it. He said, I'll buy one. I'd like to put it into my collection. He's an auto collector.
Yeah.
They wouldn't sell him one. I would have given him one. Anyway, as the leases ran out, trailers would come, tow them away, and put them into these parking lots.
Uh-huh.
Then finally somebody said, I think they're out there in Arizona, and I think they're being crushed. These guys got together, a helicopter flew out there. Sure enough, here were these beautiful cars that people loved, crushed. And that's – you got to see the movie.
I will. Well, let's make it real then. How easy is it for, you know, someone listening, you know, in Seattle to start driving an electric car? I mean, you can buy a hybrid. Can they get an electric car, a conversion? Are they only sold, you know, in Japan, like you mentioned, this with the E button? Or can I go buy an electric car tomorrow or find a plug-in hybrid converted one? Or
we're working hard as we can as a volunteer group on perfecting a more or less a plug-in hybrid kit. And those four steps we had, one of our people called Manzanita Micro over in Port Townsend has a charger that also doubles as a direct energy to direct energy. And so that's how we feed the Toyota with energy from this extra battery pack. It's a really neat piece of equipment. And we're looking at maybe $5,000 or $6,000 in hardware and whatever labor it takes to put it all together. But so we're working on that end of it. As far as going into a showroom and finding an electric car and buying it, it's almost impossible right now. The only exception are neighborhood electric vehicles, which are fine. What is a neighborhood electric vehicle?
I've seen that while doing research, the NEV.
It's a federally mandated standard that thou shalt not go over 25 miles an hour because this car, although it has seat belts, directional signals, wipers, you know, doors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it is not certified to crash into a wall at 55 miles an hour. It's certified for 25 or less, and there are a half dozen or more manufacturers making neighborhood electric vehicles. There's a wonderful dealer right here in Seattle, MC Electric, on Dearborn Street. And he'll show you, let you drive one. And for some people, it might work, you know, that really don't have to travel very far.
Sure. I mean, a great second car to do all your errands with. Get the kids to the soccer field or go up to church once a week. And all the little things you do just around the neighborhood, the neighborhood electric vehicle. Okay, that's a great option.
The only downside to that is they're brand new, and they've got brand new warranties. Like, you can buy it off a showroom floor, but it's $10,000, $12,000, $14,000 for these units. And if somebody gave me $12,000, and let's say you had a little Mazda Miata that you love.
But it's old and used. It's 10 years old.
Yes, and the motor's getting a little tired.
Yeah.
For $12,000, I can transform that Mazda Miata with batteries, electric motor, charger, speed control. It'll do 70, 75, 80 miles an hour, give you 30, 40 miles of range between charges. You see? So now we have a freeway capable, and maybe it's still got its airbags and all the other accoutrements that it originally came with.
And I'm recycling my car.
What does this say at the bottom of our handout? And I just want you to read that.
This is your...
One of our handouts we give out to everybody.
To convert a gas car to electric is the highest form of recycling.
Thank you.
All right. We've been talking with Stephen Lowe, and that's a good way to end it because we are out of time already. I can't believe it. But I'm hoping, your website has these kind of links.
Absolutely.
And so does the national website that you link to electric.
The EAAEV.org.
American Electric.
American. Mm-hmm.
Stephen Lowe, the Seattle Electric Vehicle Association, thank you so much for coming in, sharing your expertise about electric vehicles with us today. Again, the website for yours is
www.seattleeva.org.
Thank you so much. I'm Gary Scheib. Thanks for listening today. We hope you've learned something new. Join us again next week as we continue to talk with people that are making a difference in our community.